Hi, I'm Robin.
And I'm Chris. Together we're the Gen X couple.
Hey guys.
Take one. Hi everyone.
So I just have to say, I just got a new laptop and I've been using the software to record the podcast. This is my second time using it on the new computer and it's glorious. Why did I not get a new computer when we first started podcasting? My God, the processing time, it's like an eighth of what it was before.
Yeah, we are high tech now.
Well, don't go that far. We're still kind of borderline boomers, but I'm so happy that I have a new laptop. This is making my life a bajillion times easier.
And you know what I'm proud of? That we didn't have to ask the kids to help us set it.
That, or even the Geek Squad at Best Buy. Like, I feel like I don't want to say we're dumb when it comes to stuff like this, but, you know, we're borderline boomers when it comes to technology.
Yeah.
I mean, you are 50 now.
I am 50.
You're up there. But anyway, I can't believe we're almost at Valentine's Day, you guys.
I know, this year is already going by so fast.
Yeah, it is. So today we're going to do the next installment of our Interesting Facts series. And since Valentine's Day is tomorrow, of course, we're going to talk about that made up holiday today.
In fairness, all holidays are made up, though.
Okay, that is true. But I dislike Valentine's Day in particular. I don't need you or anyone to show me that you love me just because it's a silly holiday. Save it for a random day in June. Thank you very much.
And besides, we all know the real holiday is February 15th, mm-hmm. otherwise known as Half Price Candy Day.
Yep.
But also, I did go overboard this year a little bit, buying treats, sweets, and writing poems.
For Marshmallow?
Yes.
I knew you were going to say that. Stop it, you two. But anyway, yeah, we are going to be heading to CVS tomorrow morning as soon as they open up. No, not tomorrow. The 15th. Today's the 13th.
Right.
I'm all confused. I'm lucky I even know what day of the week it is. But anyway, we're going to be there as soon as they open because you guys know what we're going to stockpile. That's right. The leftover Reese's Hearts.
Oh, yeah. We will.
Yeah. Heck yeah. So enough chit-chat. Let's get into it, shall we? Chris, do you want to take this first one?
Yes.
Okay.
So the oldest known Valentine's card dates back to 1145, when Charles, the Duke of Orleans, wrote a love poem to his wife while in prison in the Tower of London. And this card is now in the British Museum.
Yeah, I don't know where you got that date, because it's actually 1415. I think you just said 1125.
Oh.
You literally just made that up.
So no, I was thinking of something else. Maybe the First Crusades or something.
I'm looking at the outline. I'm like, am I in the wrong spot? But nope, that was all you, bae. But that's okay. So it actually was 1415. And I don't remember seeing that letter when we were at the British Museum when we were there in 2019.
Yeah, I don't remember it either. But we couldn't pull ourselves away from that Egyptian section. So we definitely missed a lot, and there was so much to see.
Yeah, that was probably one of the biggest museums I've ever been to. And that ancient Egyptian section was incredible. If you yes. guys like ancient Egyptian stuff, it's an amazing display. But anyway, I would say to you that we need a trip back one of these days, but I don't know when we're ever going to even have time for that.
Yeah, we do, because we didn't see all of everything.
No, not even a fraction of it, or a fraction of it, but a very small fraction. So here's the next interesting fact for you guys. Valentine's Day traces back to a mysterious figure named Saint Valentine. Saint Valentine is a widely recognized Christian saint associated with love and romance, but the historical details about him are pretty limited and often mixed with legend. So according to tradition, Saint Valentine was a Roman priest during the reign of Emperor Claudius II, also known as Claudius Gothicus, in the 3rd century. Claudius II allegedly banned marriages for young men, believing that single men made better soldiers. Valentine defied the emperor's decree by secretly performing Christian weddings. When Valentine was discovered, he was arrested and imprisoned. While he was in prison, he is said to have restored the sight of his jailer's blind daughter and left her a note signed "Your Valentine," quote unquote, before his execution. And you guessed it, Valentine was executed on February 14th in either 269 or 270 AD. I couldn't get the exact year, but close enough. His martyrdom became a symbol of love and faithfulness. And over time, St. Valentine became associated with love, and February 14th was designated as his feast day, which evolved into the Valentine's Day that we all know today.
I had no idea about any of that.
Yeah, me neither until I started researching it. And because I love you, I'm going to take this next one also, because there's a word in here I don't think you'll be able to pronounce.
Probably not, so thank you.
And in fact, I may not be able to pronounce it either, but I definitely stand a better chance than you do. So some historians believe Valentine's Day was meant to replace Lupercalia. Lupercalia was an ancient Roman festival celebrated annually on February 15th. It was a fertility rite dedicated to Faunus, or Faunus, F-A-U-N-U-S. And he was the Roman god of agriculture and fertility, linked to the Greek god Pan. And the founders of Rome, which were Romulus and Remus, he was also linked to them as well. So the event was marked by purification ceremonies and symbolic rituals believed to promote health and fertility.
So are you going to tell us about the rituals?
Yeah, well, duh. But before I do, I have to say to you guys, there is a trigger warning, and if animal cruelty bothers you, I would forward for probably like 30 seconds or 60 seconds.
Let me cover Marcia's ears.
Please do that, because I'm sure she understands everything I'm about to say. So here we go. Priests, who were known as Luperci, sacrificed a goat, which symbolized fertility, and a dog, which symbolized purification. They then would smear the blood on their foreheads, and they would wipe it off with wool dipped in milk, which symbolized cleansing. Next was the running of the Luperci. So they were either clad in goat skins or they were naked. The Luperci ran through the city, lightly striking the bystanders on either side of them with strips of goat hide. Women who were struck were believed to become more fertile, or this would ensure an easier childbirth. By the 5th century, Lupercalia was deemed incompatible with Christianity. So Pope, and this one I don't know how to say, although I don't know if you'd say it either, Gelasius, it's G-E-L-A-S-I-U-S. So this Pope banned the festival and replaced it with the Feast of St. Valentine on February 14th, which eventually evolved into modern Valentine's Day.
That was a lot.
Yeah, it was. This next one is a little more lighthearted, though. So do you want to take this one?
Sure. So in the 19th century, not all Valentine's Day cards were about love. Vinegar Valentines were satire and sometimes mean-spirited cards sent to people who were disliked or were to reject unwelcome admirers. Hmm. Yeah, me and Marsh have a list of people we're going to send some vinegar Valentines to. Dwayne Johnson, you know what you did.
Leave the rock alone.
So unlike the sweet and sentimental Valentines, we're familiar with vinegar Valentines targeting the recipient's flaws, behaviors, or appearance with bite humor or outright rudeness. And they become...
With bite humor or biting humor?
Biting humor.
That's what I thought.
You're getting one now.
That's okay. I can use vinegar to clean. Thank you.
They became popular in the mid-1800s. Often sold inexpensively in dime stores. Some were humorous, but others could be downright cruel. They were often sent to reject unwanted romantic advances or criticize someone's habits.
Yikes.
For example, a card might depict a miser clutching coins with a verse mocking their stinginess. Postmasters sometimes refused to deliver vinegar Valentines because of the distress they caused.
Ouch. Glad those fizzled out. For this next one, we're going to talk about Valentine's Day in Japan, because in my research, this popped up and I thought it was really cool. So in Japan, Valentine's Day is celebrated a bit differently from the way it is in Western countries. The tradition focuses on women giving gifts, particularly chocolates, to men on February 14th. So there are several types of chocolates that each mean different things. And let me apologize in advance, because you're about to hear some terrible mispronunciations. I'm sorry to all my Japanese friends for this, but here we go. So the first type of chocolates that a woman would give a man on Valentine's Day would be Jiri Choco, G-I-R-I Choco, and that is obligation chocolate. So these are inexpensive chocolates given to male coworkers, classmates, or acquaintances to show appreciation or maintain goodwill. They're not romantic, and it's more of a cultural courtesy. And I feel like I've said so a lot in this episode, and I'm sorry, but I'll probably keep doing it. So I acknowledge it, and I apologize, but I'm not stopping. Are you rushing me? So the next kind of chocolate is Hanmei Choco, which are true feelings chocolate. These are higher quality or even homemade chocolates given to someone a woman has romantic feelings for, such as a boyfriend, husband, or crush. Tomo Choco, which is friendship chocolate, is the next one. And in recent years, women have started exchanging chocolates with their female friends to celebrate friendship. Love that. The last one is Jibun Choco, and Jibun, J-I-B-U-N Choco, which is self-indulgence chocolate. So I love this the most. Some women buy chocolates for themselves as a treat, which is totally something I would do. In Valentine's Day in Japan, it's heavily influenced by marketing campaigns. Valentine's Day became popular in the mid-20th century when confectionery companies promoted the idea of giving chocolates, and it remains one of the busiest times of the year for the chocolate industry in Japan. But we're not done yet. So, I said so again. I'm trying not to say it. I don't know what's wrong with me today. Do I do this all the time?
I don't know. I really don't listen to you that much.
White Day is celebrated on March 14th, which is obviously exactly 1 month after Valentine's Day. This day would serve as a reciprocal holiday for those who received gifts, which were usually chocolates on Valentine's Day. White Day was introduced in 1978 by a confectionery company in Japan as a marketing strategy to encourage men to give gifts in return for what they received on Valentine's Day. Initially, the focus was on gifting marshmallows, which is why it's called White Day. Over time, other gifts like chocolate, cookies, and jewelry became more common. Men typically give white chocolate, which is a nod to the name, of course, candies, flowers, or jewelry for romantic partners. It is customary for the return gift to be of equal or greater value. As an aside, making chocolates at home for someone special is seen as a meaningful gesture. It's a way to express sincerity and effort.
That was really cool. I didn't know any of that.
Yeah, I didn't either until I had started researching, and I think that was super cool.
So, here's one that I thought was interesting.
Yes.
Richard Cadbury.
I saw what you did. He gave me the side eye. Like, I know what you did. Good job making fun of me in front of everybody.
He was the son of the founder of Cadbury Chocolates.
Can I make a pause right there for a second? When we went to London, everybody was like, oh my God, you got to get Cadbury chocolate. It's the best chocolate. Spoiler alert. It's one of the worst chocolates I've ever had. I'm sorry. I like the Cadbury cream eggs that we have here in the US, but the Cadbury chocolate in London was not that good, you guys. Sorry. Okay, carry on. Sorry. I had to get that off my chest. It's been weighing on me for years.
So Richard Cadbury is known for creating the first heart-shaped box of chocolates in 1868. As a way to market his candies specifically for Valentine's Day, he created it during the Victorian era, a time when romantic gestures were highly prized. Richard Cadbury introduced beautifully designed, hand-painted chocolate boxes to make his chocolates stand out. The heart-shaped box was one of the earliest examples and became a popular gift for Valentine's Day, as it could be repurposed to store keepsakes after the chocolates were gone.
I knew what you were trying to say.
This is innovation is credited with helping establish the tradition of giving chocolates on Valentine's Day.
Interesting. Hey, Chris, let me ask you this. What's the first thing that pops into your head when someone says Valentine's Day?
Candy, marsh.
Stop it. Oh my God, I must just coughed into the microphone. Sorry. Here's a hint though. He shoots arrows.
Oh yeah, Cupid.
Bingo. So let's talk about, I said so again. Oh my God, why do I keep doing this today? Let's talk about the origins of Cupid.
Yeah, let's. So
Cupid.
Cupid, that was the cherub symbol of Valentine's Day, where it has roots in Roman and Greek mythology.
You just kept going to, because I was about to lose it with a giggle attack, but then I was like, why isn't he stopping?
That's
He's
because I'm
not.
professional.
Ouch. So I'm going to tell you about the Greek origins first, and then we're going to specifically talk about Eros. Is it Eros or Eros? Do you know? I don't know. I'm not
You
that
asking
up.
me how to pronounce something?
Well, I don't know. I thought you knew more about Greek mythology than I do. The last time I really learned about it was in junior high. So it's Eros. I'm going to call him Eros. Eros, Eros. I'm going to call him Eros. So Eros is, I said so again. Gosh, we are getting way off topic today. Eros is, was
Yes.
I going to say Eros or Eros? What is my problem today? Eros is the Greek counterpart to Cupid and was originally depicted as handsome and an immortal youth with great power over both gods and humans. Eros was considered to be the god of desire, attraction, and love. In early mythology, he was portrayed as a primordial deity emerging from chaos, also known as the void, as a force driving creation and unity. So, oh, I said it again. Should I just keep going? I'm just not even going to point out when I say so anymore. Eros was considered the god of desire, attraction, and love. Did I say that?
You're good.
I think I already said that. Anyway, over time, he became reimagined as the son of Aphrodite, the goddess of love and beauty, and was often shown as mischievous and playful, wielding a bow and arrow, or a bow and arrows, plural, to instill love or desire. And here's the Roman adaptation of Cupid. The Romans adopted Eros and renamed him Cupid, which comes from the Latin cupido, meaning desire. Cupid was portrayed as the son of Venus, who is the Roman equivalent of Aphrodite. Roman depictions often emphasized his childlike appearance with wings and a quiver of arrows. Two types of arrows are typically associated with him. There's golden arrows, which inspire love, and lead arrows, which cause aversion.
And one of Cupid's most famous stories is a love tale of Cupid and
Psyche.
Psyche,
Yeah.
a narrative about love, trust, and redemption. Here's how the story goes. Psyche, a mortal woman of extraordinary beauty, catches Cupid's attention. Venus, jealous of Psyche, orders Cupid to make her fall in love with a hideous creature, but Cupid falls in love with her instead. After a series of trials and tribulations, Psyche is granted immortality, and the two are united, symbolizing the triumphant of love over obstacles.
Seriously, that story is famous because I've literally never heard it
I'm
before.
sure some of our listeners have.
You say so. But let's move on because we still have a few more interesting facts for you guys. Surprisingly, teachers receive more Valentine's Day cards than anyone else. Following teachers, children often exchange the most Valentine's Day cards, with an estimated 145 million cards exchanged every year.
That's not really that surprising because all those packs of Valentine's cards come with one for the teacher.
A good point. Did you know the different colors of roses symbolize different things? I don't know. I didn't really realize this until I started doing some research, but I'm going to tell you eight different colors of roses and what they all mean. Red roses are the classic symbol of love, passion, and romance. They are often given to express deep emotions and affection. Pink roses represent admiration, gratitude, and appreciation. They can convey a sense of sweetness and affection. White roses symbolize purity, innocence, and new beginnings. They're often used for weddings or to convey a sense of deep respect. Yellow roses represent friendship, joy, and happiness. They are ideal for showing platonic affection or celebrating a positive relationship or friendship. Orange roses symbolize enthusiasm, desire, and passion. They can convey a sense of excitement or admiration. Lavender roses, often associated with enchantment, mystery, and love at first sight. They can suggest an element of awe or wonder in a romantic connection. Blue roses represent the unattainable or the mysterious, as blue roses don't naturally exist. but they can symbolize uniqueness or the desire for the impossible. Finally, peach roses signify sincerity, gratitude, and appreciation, and they can be a great choice to express thankfulness.
What do black roses mean?
Death? I'm pretty sure they mean death, but they definitely look cool.
They do. Well, while we're still on the topic of roses, did you know that the ancient Romans believed that red roses symbolize the blood of Venus, the goddess of love, who pricked her foot in a rose, then while running to help her beloved? This association with love and sacrifice has influenced the popularity of red roses on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, she was an awesome goddess. I didn't know any of that.
Well, now you know.
And knowing is half the battle. Yeah.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. G.I. Joe told me that. I was waiting for a reaction from you and I got nothing. Anyway, here's another interesting one. In the 1800s, physicians prescribed chocolate to people suffering from quote-unquote broken hearts or other romantic woes. It was believed to lift spirits and act as a love-inducing food.
Say what? That's crazy. I'm going to have to get my doctors to prescribe me chocolate because I have a broken heart every time I leave Marsh.
Oh my God, you guys. It is true, though. They did prescribe chocolate for broken hearts. In the 1800s, chocolate was also prescribed as a treatment for mental health issues, particularly perceived for its mood-lifting qualities. I said that backwards, but you guys know what I mean. Sometimes I mix up my words. While the scientific understanding of mental health was, like, obviously far less developed than it is today, chocolate was thought to have therapeutic effects due to its stimulating properties. Chocolate, especially in its early forms, contains caffeine and theobromine, which are stimulants that could boost energy and alertness. It was sometimes recommended for depression or fatigue. It was also believed to help with anxiety and nervous disorders. Some doctors even suggested it as a calming agent, as it was thought to help settle the nerves. Back then, chocolate was also linked to digestive health, and people were prescribed it for stomach issues that might have been associated with stress or mental health concerns. But by the late 1800s, the use of chocolate for its medicinal properties began to decline as modern pharmacology developed more targeted treatments. Nonetheless, the association between chocolate and mood improvement remained, and it's been an ongoing part of popular culture ever since.
I know with absolute certainty that chocolate boosts your mood.
Yeah, 1,000,000%.
So in 2020...
You said so. Did you say that to make fun of me?
Yes.
Thank you.
In 2024, consumer spending on Valentine's Day totaled $25.8 billion. In fact, it's estimated that around 58 million pounds of chocolate are sold in the U.S. alone, with heart-shaped boxes being the most popular packaging, of course.
I wonder how many pounds of chocolate I've eaten in my lifetime. It's thousands. Thousands. We should go to Hilliard's. That just made me think of that.
We should.
We should take a ride up to Hilliard's. They don't sponsor us, but they make amazing chocolate. It's in Easton, Massachusetts. It's the best chocolate I've ever had.
The best.
And while we are on the topic of Valentine's Day candy, the most popular Valentine's Day candy, Conversation Hearts, were invented by the New England Confectionery Company, also known as Necco, in the 1860s. At their peak, about 8 billion, with a B, Conversation Hearts were produced each year, although production challenges have led to periodic shortages sometimes.
Yeah, don't you like those?
Yeah, I used to, but now I'm afraid I'm going to break a tooth if I bite into one, so I actually haven't had one in many, many years. My mom always had a candy dish on the dining room table when we were kids, and like forever, and there were always Conversation Hearts in it around Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I remember the candy on the dining room table, and there's not really a great transition into this next interesting fact, so I'm just going to go ahead and say
it. Yeah, just do it.
Singles Awareness Day. SAD, sad, is celebrated on February 14th, the same day as Valentine's Day, but with a twist. It's a day for single people to embrace and celebrate their independence and self-love. The holiday is often marked with humor, and some people use it as an opportunity to gather with other singles, enjoy activities, or focus on self-care.
That's awesome. And on the complete other end of the spectrum, studies show that people tend to get engaged on February 14th more than almost any other day. Many people see Valentine's Day as the perfect opportunity for a romantic proposal, leading to a spike in engagements.
Yeah, Robin and I got engaged on Christmas Eve.
Yes, indeed, back in 2009. We're coming to the end. We only have a few more to go, but I couldn't end the podcast without a few really cool fun facts. Every year, the Italian city of Verona, which is the setting of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, receives thousands of letters addressed to Juliet Capulet. Volunteers, who are known as Juliet's secretaries, respond to these letters as a gesture of spreading love and comfort.
That's pretty cool.
Right? I love that. And another one I absolutely adore are Love Days in South Korea. Love Days are special days celebrated each month by couples, and they're centered around expressions of love and affections. I'm going to go through the list. The most notable ones, I actually think I have one for every month except for January. I don't think they do anything in January. If I'm wrong, somebody please write in and tell me. But what I found was Valentine's Day on February 14th. And similar to Japan, women give chocolates or gifts to men, typically expressing romantic affection. They also do White Day on March 14th, where the men reciprocate by giving gifts, which are often chocolates or sweets, to women. Black Day on April 14th, and singles, or those who didn't receive gifts on Valentine's Day or White Day, gather together to eat, jajangmyeon, which is black bean paste noodles, to console themselves. Rose Day on May 14th, which is where couples exchange roses as a sign of love. Kiss Day on June 14th, and couples are encouraged to share a smooch to celebrate their relationship. Silver Day on July 14th is a day for couples to express their love with silver gifts or jewelry. Green Day on August 14th. Couples celebrate by wearing matching green items or taking part in outdoor activities. Photo Day is on September 14th, and that's where couples take memorable photos together. Wine Day on October 14th. Couples would enjoy a glass of wine together as a gesture of love. Movie Day is on November 14th, and that's where, you guessed it, couples watch a romantic movie together. And finally, Hug Day is on December 14th, and again, you guessed it, that's where couples would embrace each other to celebrate their love and affection.
Those sound like a lot of fun. We might have to celebrate a couple of those.
Yeah, those are wicked fun. And finally, to round out our interesting Valentine's Day facts, I couldn't let you guys go without mentioning Galentine's Day. Yeah, you heard me. Galentine's Day, which is celebrated on February 13th. It's a fun, unofficial holiday focused on celebrating friendships, especially among women. It originated from a show called Parks and Rec, which is on TV, back in the 2010s?
Yes.
Love that show. Great show. If you've never watched it, go back and watch show. It. So the lead character, Leslie Knope, who is played by Amy Poehler, throws a brunch to celebrate her female friendships on Galentine's Day. It would be a day to honor and appreciate close friends, often with gatherings, gifts, or other bonding activities, creating a positive alternative to the more romantic aspects of Valentine's Day. It's definitely grown in popularity over the last 10 to 12 years or so, and it's a fun way to emphasize platonic love and connection. And I really love that it's become a thing. Not that I've ever celebrated it, and doubt I ever will, but you never know. I'm always down for brunch.
You never know. And if you stuck with us for this whole episode, thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed these fun facts as much as we did.
Yeah, and if you loved this episode, tell all your friends. And if you hated it, sorry. Come back next week and maybe you'll like that episode better.
Or go have some chocolate.
Yeah, definitely. Don't forget February 15th, Half Price Candy Day. So come back next week. We have an awesome interview. We've already recorded it. It's scheduled to go out on the 20th. We have a surprise guest, but I know you guys are going to like it.
And if you celebrate tomorrow, happy Valentine's Day. And if you don't, happy Friday. And until then, see you later, alligator.
In a wild crocodile.